Good morning, everybody. It is Friday morning and it's rainy in Johannesburg, which is just weird in the middle of winter, right? Isn't it bizarre? Very odd. But I've got Simpiwe and Ben here and they're not bizarre. Also, James and Flex, they're busy running things behind the scenes. So we're all ready to look after you in the middle of winter and we are not going anywhere in a hurry. Well, not until 8 anyway.
It really is. It's like the dead right now. Yeah, I made a golf video yesterday. And the previously beautiful space, it is just desolate. Nothing's alive.
See, this is why people...
Dormant times. Oh.
Yeah. No, you're right. Everything that was green is no longer, right? So in June, somewhere through June, you can still get like glimpses of summer and happier times and gardens and trees and in lawns and in plants. But somewhere in July, that dream dies.
Yeah, fast.
And everything goes brown. And grey and cuck.
There's no dreams in July.
No. July is without any dreams.
Well, it's a big reset month, right?
Yeah.
Because now, on top of that, we have no water.
Oh, have you not got water?
No.
Yeah.
Well, luckily, it's coming from the sky today. So if you feel like a shower, just head outside.
It's fucking cold, though. But yes, that's how it's going. No dreams in July.
No, I started watching this series called The Sandman.
Oh, okay.
It has potential. It's one of Neil Gaiman. He wrote all those books about the gods, you know, mythology. He's studied all of that stuff over years, and he's written these really good shows. This one's about dreams. Mm-hmm. And the character, the dream character, is obviously the person, the creature, the god in charge of the dream realm. And what happens to you when you close your eyes and your mind drifts away. And then obviously that's a separate realm to all the others. His siblings are death and destiny and desire and despair and destruction. So, it's a hell of a family. You can imagine the dinner table conversations there. But when you were saying now dreams dying, I was just thinking how unbelievable it is. Like, you can have the most realistic dream imaginable, wake up and not remember a bloody thing.
Oh, yes.
Right? Or the opposite. You can have a kind of sketchy, hazy dream, but you'll remember everything. It's a funny thing to realize that your brain is like defragmenting. In some ways, sleep is just a chance for your brain to have a rest.
It is,
and to organize its files. Mm. And to sort and locate and that it's purely a mathematical and geometrical process.
It's an interesting way of putting it. Like, if you find a box of old photographs, you look through and there's funny things. It's kind of like what your brain is, because you take in so much every day.
Oh yeah,
especially with our phones, we take in so much stuff.
Too much.
And now your brain's going, what the hell's this?
Well,
and this.
I mean, they famously reckon that when I say they, I'm not sure who put the study together, but there was a point somewhere in the, I think in 1990s, where someone figured that if you read all the news that there was in London in 1680, and you read everything that you got in a modern newspaper when those were still a thing, you know, because this is the 90s we're talking about, it would be like those people from the 1680s being bombarded with tetrabytes of information.
Sure.
Yeah.
They just wouldn't have been able to handle it at all. Because to them, most days you woke up, kind of washed your face, took a shit, plowed the fields, patted the cow on the neck, made sure it wasn't hungry or thirsty.
Good life.
Fed the kids. You know, kind of maybe gave your wife a good seeing to. Headed out back into the fields, you know, checked on the amount of rain, did a couple of things, maybe had a pee, and then stared blankly into the space in front of you for at least an hour. Maybe if you were really, really lucky, you could read. And then maybe you had one or two books that you would read whole life long.
I'd love to do that to my brain for 5 years or so.
I think you'd get
just
like, so bored.
Gareth, just,
it sounds very, it sounds just almost like that noble idea of just existing rather than trying to do everything. But I don't think it was very fulfilling. And we don't know for sure because we're not living there. I mean, there are people who live in very, very distant and rural parts of the world who I suppose have a similar kind of seasonality to their lives, and everything just kind of ticks, but the metronome is going much more slowly than the rest of us. And no, and then there are people who can't slow down.
And that's
why would you want to slow down?
Because we can't keep overloading ourselves. This is the thing. It's like when the glass is full, the glass is full. You can't keep pouring shit in. You're going to get a mess. I think a lot of people are just overflowing glasses. They're absolute messes because they're trying to. That's why people like subscribe to ideologies, I reckon. That's why you get such extremes, because people are like, fuck it, I actually don't know. So therefore, I'm just going to subscribe. Like and subscribe.
yeah, like and subscribe, everybody. there's an instruction for you first thing in the morning. Yeah, I don't know if it's about glasses and overfilling them, or about putting too many things in glasses, or it's kind of. I always think this is part of what makes life exciting, is that you have so many parameters that you can move along, you know, age, body, mind, spirit, material, understanding, knowledge. Feeling different feelings, cold, hot, fit, unfit, tired, awake, energetic, excited. There are so many of these things that you can feel that are just, it makes it a really big adventure. Like this morning, I was, for some stupid, unknown, and kind of ridiculous reason, when I spend more than 2 seconds thinking about it, I was so excited that it was raining outside, because I had a weird feeling last night that I hadn't heard the rain for a long time. And then when I woke up this morning, I thought, that can't be right. And then went and looked. First thing, I got out of bed. Normally, the first thing you would do is like go and take a pee or like wash your face or whatever. I walked straight to the window to look. And it was kind of exciting. It's like, wow, rain in the middle of winter. This is new. This is something I haven't experienced for a long time. So I don't know. It probably has happened before, but for me, it was nice. It's like I love being alive. Does that make sense?
It completely. I just think, to my point, which I made badly, is that if you were overloaded with shit, you wouldn't appreciate the nuance or subtlety of rain in a season. If you're overloaded with shit all the time, you miss so much stuff. Like miss personality traits of someone who's like in your day-to-day life,
yeah,
because you're so fixated on shit.
I do.
And I think you miss so much stuff because you get force-fed so much stuff.
Okay. Yeah, and our attention is horribly disintermediated by screens and noise and emails and pollution and, you know, other people's bullshit that they foist onto. I've always said foisting is the most terrible thing you can do. You know, when people foist their shit on you, straight to jail. I think foisting should carry a maximum sentence.
Oh, because then you're a foisterer.
Some people foist things. That's all they do all day. They walk around, foist, foist, foist. Got to stop this foisting. I'm telling you, it's a reason for many people to be miserable. Okay, so let's get into it. We've got a few things to talk about this morning.
Talk about your cell phone cover for a start, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's very gold, hey?
I know. I didn't order this.
Which auntie in Bedford did you beat up for that?
No, so what happened was, I really didn't want this one. I wanted remember I had a plain one?
Here you are with us.
Yeah, so I ordered.
It's very flashy.
So I ordered it online, and then this arrived, and I was like, okay. This is probably the one that Charlize Theron's mother has on her phone.
Oh, Charlize, fast myself one.
Yeah.
You say ma. Telling you. I think a lot that people's cell phone cover tells you a lot about them. I went around the last few days.
That's very flashy.
I know. So yesterday and the day before, I actually didn't have a cell phone cover. And then I thought,
don't do that.
That's not clever.
Mm.
That is really stupid. So I put this thing on and I'm very unhappy.
Okay,
with
so
it.
When you ordered it, take a
screen. What color
this.
Did you think you were getting?
No, I thought it was this, but I didn't notice this gold crap all around.
Which is the most noticeable thing about them.
No, but you see, I didn't think, I thought that was just what they put on to try and sell, because it said plain or whatever in the description. So I was genuinely misled. Gareth, be careful what you order, telling you.
There are Lebanese men who just got tenders in shipping who would blush at that cell phone cover.
Yeah, it's quite loud, hey? Because I had another one in the same color.
Love it.
But I didn't look after it, obviously, because it's now so scratched and worn that you can see it's plasticky, you know? Mm. You know when it starts going that sort of opaque plastic color?
Yeah, I mean, like, mine's hardy.
Is he? It's
practical.
Ben's got, like, a military style.
But, like, also yours has a, you can, like, lay it on the thing, right?
I know, but then it broke. That little clip thing is broke.
Oh, you see, you also get an embarrassing broken thing. Simpio, what are you guys going on?
Mine is just a simple blue.
See, I like that. Those are the ones. Like, that was what I wanted, except in this kind of
that was
brown
what
leather.
I wanted. He comes back with Liberace's handbag, and he's like, oh, no, that's what I wanted.
Like, all that's missing is a matching purse.
Just missed out.
I'm going to resell it to, like, some Tani and Benoni and make a fortune, so just chill. She'll ask me for it. Watch. After someone's seen it on the show, they'll be like, how much for that one? This one here that you've got.
Guys, we really should sell more shit on the show.
We really should. So I want to sell my favorite new thing is, you know, Trump finished off that thing when he bombed Iran with, thank you for your attention to this matter. So I want to make a T-shirt with the B-2 bomber flying with, thank you for your attention to this matter, written behind it. It's kind of it's not an original idea, but that's sort of what I'm going for.
Okay.
Anyway. All right. So a couple of things I wanted us to talk about this morning. First of all, I've had it now. I've said no more podcasts. Everybody's got a fucking podcast now. I don't want it. Don't tell me you've launched a podcast. It's enough. This is like, oh my God. It's like everybody believing they can sing. It's just not. It's not a thing. Most people cannot sing, and if you make them sing, your ears will hurt. Mm. It ruins music for everybody else. It makes a mockery of the really talented people. And you know, I've always been a massive supporter of podcasts for the longest time. Everybody who started a podcast, I'd be like, "Yay, join the club! It's lots of fun. Great, great to have you on board." It's now. I've been doing this almost 12 years. Enough. Enough. It's enough. There are a lot of people who shouldn't be doing podcasting, and I hope many of them fail. I really do. Now, when people say, I got a podcast, I go, good, I hope you fail. Just because I've had enough. It's too many.
Podcasts are hard. Everyone can start one, but not everyone can keep one.
Well, we can't.
And it all weeds out.
Who's listening to all the... If everybody's making podcasts, who's listening to them?
Family members.
Probably.
But I mean, there's a nice niche for you, Gareth, to monetize. You just rate podcasts and roast them.
I could. He does... That could be fun, but I just don't – I don't want to listen to them, and that's what takes up the time.
Like, you get James to listen to it, and then you would just make notes.
Well, so we were talking about Michelle Obama's one, which I listened to the first episode because it was research, you know. I thought Big Mike on the mic. And I thought this could be a very exciting thing because maybe Big Mike will tell us stories about behind the scenes at the White House and –
You wasted your time.
All that kind of shit. Oh, by the way, I've got to ask you what you think of Candace Owens' latest revelation about Brigitte Macron, because I know that's your thing. But I just feel it's enough now. It's enough. If you haven't already got a podcast, I reckon what we do is we say, end of July, if you haven't already started whatever you've got in mind, whatever your dream podcast is, and you're not going to do it, by end of July, the podcast window closes. Okay, that's where the wormhole is finished. If you don't get through by the end of July, no podcasts. Yes. Sorry. Okay, anyway, the reason I brought that up, there are some regulars I listen to, and sometimes they do great stuff, but I'm sure this will appear. Have you got that video of the optimized guy that I sent you yesterday? Okay, well, get it ready in the meantime. I'll do a little preamble. So... All of these podcasts, well, a lot of them, are based on you becoming a better person.
Yeah.
Right? You optimizing your life.
Great initial idea.
Sure. And this is the kind of stuff you should eat, and this is the kind of stuff you should do to your body, and this is the kind of stuff that you should think about and read, and this is how you sleep better, and this is how – and it's all a lot to take on board, because if you lived according to what all these podcasters say you should, I mean, you'd be spending all of your time measuring yourself, weighing yourself – analyzing yourself, you'd be so self-involved that you'd probably be the most boring creature walking the face of the earth. And no one on earth would want to talk to you. But so many of these people are into this in a big way. I'm talking to the podcasters and their listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's just, it's got to the point where it's this ridiculous. Take a look.
He doesn't wake up. He activates. He once stared at the sun so long it blinked. He doesn't cry. He has a dopamine reset protocol for that. He says, I love you, then follows up with, based on current attachment theory. He doesn't eat food. He front loads micronutrients. He once broke up with someone for having blue light in their bedroom. He tracks his REM sleep harder than most people track their kids. His blood type is magnesium glycinate. He told a child to delay gratification or die trying. He once did a 4-hour podcast on the proper way to blink. He wears red light goggles during sex. He gets more lab work than cancer patients. He doesn't nap. He parasympathetically down-regulates. He refers to orgasms as zinc depletion events. His pee is clearer than his moral boundaries. He is the most optimized man in the world.
I don't always drink, but when I do, it's ketone esters and a nootropic mocktail. Stay vigilant, my friends.
Yeah. I hate people like that. I don't know about you.
I thought I'd laugh more at that, but it's actually just too close to the bone.
It's
really.
So close to the bone, right? Because these guys, and listen, I think a lot of them are probably very nice people. And I've always thought it would be fun to meet, you know, like a Rogan doesn't really do that stuff. It's more kind of the Tim Ferriss's and the Chris Williamson.
Well, I mean, it's based on Andrew Huberman. That's what
and Huberman.
The entire character is basically him.
I think they'd be interesting people to meet, but I've become so bored and disenchanted with this whole optimized person routine.
Well, I've got some thoughts on this because, as you know, I've tried a lot of this stuff and I love the space because I want to be better. But there's a ceiling and there's a finish line to the things that you do. And then you just got to get on with it and not fucking talk about it.
Right.
That's where I kind of got to. So I learned many, many things. I'm a much better person as a result. I'm much happier and healthier. And when you go through these things, I mean, I'm a natural content creator. That's all I've ever done. And you think, yeah, but there's only so much you can tell people. And you know, if like a TV show back in the day, you get commissioned for 13 episodes, mm-hmm. a series, maybe two, maybe three if it goes really well. But it runs its course, right? Yeah. And then it stops because there's only so much you can do that's actually beneficial. So now you've got podcasters who are having to do something every week, basically.
Yeah.
And that's why we're at this position where that spoof video you just played now is not actually funny. It's actually real life. It's because people have to keep going. So when they keep going, they keep making up shit. And it's this endless train where they've got to keep feeding this optimization monster thing. There's only so much. Humans are quite simple. Just get on with your shit. But because you've got audience and you've got way to monetize, these guys don't stop. So they do actually become parodies of their former self, which was actually a good intentioned start point.
I think that's a very good theory.
I'm very surprised how succinctly that came out of my mouth, but clearly I'm thinking about this a lot.
You've obviously put it together as a concept in your head because it might have been bothering you too, or perhaps you've just had enough.
Pretty much had enough.
Yeah, but again.
It's just like trial and error, which is I think every person should do before they rip the living shit out of it on the show on Friday. But it is. I mean, like guys, if you want to be the optimized man, it's 4 or 5 things, but just keep doing them.
Yeah.
It's not more
but
than.
No one wants to hear that. That's the boring part.
Stop weighing.
No, everybody. Simpu is right. Everyone wants a secret.
Yes.
They want some kind of miracle diet secret, thing that'll just change the world for them. Like they just want to swallow a pill, or they want some miracle, and it's not going to happen that way. The boring reality is that it's routine, it's constant application, it's consistency. Mm. It's discipline, and that stuff is fucking boring.
Hugely.
You don't want to talk about it. Listen, if we have to mention what we all do to try and stay fit or at least stop ourselves from being fat, eventually it's just enough. Mm-hmm. There's only so much you could talk about.
A lot of it is massively anecdotal as well, and yeah,
it is an individual to you.
Yes.
You know. I did, for the first time in ages yesterday, I did like a whole lot of lunges, and fuck me. coming up those stairs felt like I was walking through hell.
Great thing to do, huh? It's my least favorite thing to do.
No, I hate doing it too.
Split squats.
But I have to do...
I love those.
How? Oof. Why?
No, the results are amazing.
I know, but they're fucking hard to do.
This is the funny thing, right? Is like I did a few of these, I did a couple of sets of them thinking I better catch up on the time I've missed not doing them, avoiding them on purpose. And I hated it while I was doing them. I hated it while I was coming up the stairs this morning, but I want to do it again. It's weird how that you sometimes are motivated by the things.
Yes.
Just maybe it's because what you said, that you know it's working, that you get the results.
Yes. It's horrible. It's horrible in the moment. You want to give up. You're just like, I can't even do another set. But like after a few weeks, a couple of days, you start seeing the results. And you're like, yeah, let's go. Like, in fact, I want to go in harder. I want to do this better. Get your form right. You know, push yourself even more. And I think that's the...
Get your core more to get more of a beat.
You know what I mean? All of these things. And then you just like, and then you start adding weights to it and you start increasing your weights to it. And before you know it, you're a beast at it.
Well, I brought up something cool. I'm certainly not trying to do an optimized man thing, but James actually did what I said on the show on Wednesday.
Oh,
so on Monday, I think it was Monday. Well, I decided to
the podcast on Spotify.
On Monday, I decided to have a braai all on my own for myself. Right?
Okay. Nice.
So I got I got
little. That's what inspired him.
Braai going and cooked a steak beautifully. Pts, tss, you know, did the whole thing.
Sure.
Fantastic. Okay. All just for me, just a braai for myself, and then we talked about it on Wednesday's show.
He did.
And James was like, I'm going to do that tonight. And then he sent me a picture of him doing his braai. You loved it, right?
You guys said he meat to each other.
Yeah, he brought some leftover braai meat. We had some braai meat in the office.
How nice.
It was really, really nice.
James, how big's your steak, James?
Fuck it, James. You brought for everyone the next day? How much steak? Did you cook half a fucking cow? Wow. Okay, that's a lot.
Let's get some pics. Let's see James and meat.
All right. And then I do want you to see this car, Ben, because I think this is the kind of car.
Is that it? Are we going straight off to.
Well, you want to talk more about that?
No, you said. Really, and then we're sending pictures James to each other.
Yeah, so he sent me a picture of his. No, just his braai going.
Great. Let's see him.
Well, James, you got the picture of your braai?
Guys, 2025.
Yeah, show them. All right.
Okay.
We live in multimedia. Anyway, I mean,
there's nothing wrong with braaiing on your own, right?
No, nothing at all. In fact, I encourage more people to do that. I think braaiing is such a therapeutic thing to do. Like, I believe in and it's very good for men to know how to braai. Like, I think if you want to impress me, tell me that you know how to braai.
Okay.
See, but guys, what we've done in the last 5 minutes, we spoke about squats and steaks, and then we're moving on. Next week, we're not going to talk about squats and steaks again because we're going to over. It's been done now. It's like,
yeah, but that is because a lot of these shows, people are dealing with one area of expertise,
yes,
and they talk to the same people or different people about that area of expertise until it's just dead. And we don't do that. We jump around like
exactly.
Got fucking severe ADHD, right?
Just that's how we are. Going back to the optimization thing and the whole, you've got to be 10,000 hours, you've got to be niche, you've got to do all these things. I get that. I appreciate that. But then you've also got to be honest to understand when you've hit your ceiling with these things.
Yeah, it's like a...
And like how much is actually in the tank?
Like a rugby player who knows it's time to quit now because your knees are about to completely cave in.
So that's a really good analogy. It's like sports people go, okay, like you're 40 now. Okay. You can't just keep running into things. It's like you got to stop.
Oh,
there we go. There's the steak.
Okay.
Okay, that's good. There we got a medium rare going on there, right?
A line of cocaine on the side.
James always has a massive bump.
Salt ribeye.
It's the Escobar ribeye.
They're accusing you of being a drug addict.
James, the next time you have a bump, you got to cut it a bit finer. It's a bit coarse. Your old...
burn.
James, it's a bit Hannibal Lecter-ish, but I mean, if that's your taste, that's your taste.
Nice. He says it was so good. We can't hear you, remember. most people listening to this and watching it, all they hear is
I can't hear James at all.
In the background. They don't James, know what that is.
Yeah. Like,
it seems like you have notes for him. Like, on some next time.
Take a better fucking photo.
Ben has a lot to say about other people's food.
Look, the thing about men is that we should all be cooking steaks. You know, like, and I'm going to go lavatorial here.
Yeah, go.
Guys joke about shit all the time, right? Literally. Okay. It's like you take a massive dump or whatever. It's
after a big steak.
Guys talk about this kind of stuff. Cooking a steak well is like taking a giant shit. It's like rewarding. It's worth talking about. It's relatable. Awesome.
There is something very basic and primal about cooking and eating meat. Meat. It's meat you must eat. Oh, you know, something about that.
Speaking about primal, did we ever cover that whole Liver King thing from last week?
No.
How you sort of threatened Joe Rogan.
What happened? Because, I mean, the Liver King looks like a homeless... Yeah, vagrant.
Too many drugs, guys.
Too many drugs. I don't think you could blame his diet for the way he looks. It's drugs, right?
No, I mean, that guy had issues coming into the game, and just that much steroids and other shit, and it's just a bit of a mess. But the thing is, like, he always wanted the attention to be what he was, and then he was ousted as being the drug person, and he's the kind of guy who just always wanted to be on the Joe Rogan show. You can tell. Because
so he eventually went on the show?
No. On his way up, and before it got officially outed that he was taking all the drugs, he really wanted to be on the Joe Rogan show. And then Joe was like, I don't want to talk to this guy. It's not interesting to me. And credit to Joe, he was always of that thing. He was never like being too outrageous about this guy's joke and blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, it's like, I don't want to talk to him. And he did whatever he could. He went to like Joe's friends who had podcasts because they have so many podcasts. Yeah. And he went on there basically saying, can you get me on Joe's podcast? And they'll be like, yeah, I'll ask, whatever. And then he got outed as this drug fucking monster. And then last week or 2 weeks ago, he decided that he was making all these videos like, I'm coming to Austin and I want to fight you, Joe Rogan.
Oh, Jesus.
And then he got arrested for terror threats or some shit.
No.
And then, no, he's off the deep end.
He's not okay, eh?
There's a restraining order against him now. Jesus. He can't go within a certain, whatever restraining orders are, of Joe Rogan.
Oh, really?
And again, Joe, to his credit, is like, this guy probably needs a bit of help. You know, he needs professional care. He didn't say, like,
show a picture of the latest picture you can find of the Liver King. Oh, Jesus, there we go.
Liver King arrested, yeah.
Oh, my God. Look at him. This was supposedly the most healthy man, right?
Yeah, he was never the most healthy man.
No, there was a time where people.
He was always wanted to be the most jacked, natural. It was never about health with him.
Look
at
that.
He wanted to be this primal, ancestral, blah, blah, whatever the fucking thing is.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like he had a proper life, though.
Yes.
I'd also love to live at a ranch with all this stuff and eat free range shit and the things that he was saying. I'd love to do that kind of stuff.
And then you're going to look like that.
No. Levels. Obviously levels. Obviously levels. Eat enough. You train enough. Don't always do the extremes. Yeah, he was a joke.
He still is a joke.
Optimization thing. He got all caught up in that.
Yeah.
And I think he already had a couple of screws loose.
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, clearly mentally, he's still a bit physically, what kind of shape do you think that guy's in?
I think that hits the wall very soon. Mm. Look, I mean, he appeared to be wealthy. And if you get your blood work done and you're putting all the right things to keep a balance of whatever his balance is, you can keep going. But eventually your body can't keep up anymore. And that's what all these guys who take with the heavy steroids is that they eventually hit the wall.
Well, let's talk about someone hitting the wall. P. Diddy, this also came up on Wednesday very briefly, but I have not been following the show very specific degree, and maybe Simpiwe can help us out here. You've got a shout out to the lawyer of P. Diddy, Brian Steele. What's that all about?
Yeah, so I didn't follow this court case very closely because I was just like, this guy.
So disappointing, right? It's so like
he's a creep. And
he's such
Cassie
a
was the first
person.
Witness to speak, and I was like, I'm good, I'm great. I don't need to hear more. But long story short, the jury came back and basically found him not guilty.
Right? Well, on certain charges.
Yeah, but.
All the big ones.
Yeah, you know, on racketeering and stuff like that. But I'm more impressed with the lawyer. That's what I want to talk about. Because homeboy, in the space of less than a year, represented Young Thug. And he was also accused for racketeering and all this...
I feel like racketeering, it's just like this, we don't know what to call it, racketeering.
But like drugs and you know in America. And he got him acquitted. He's the same lawyer who basically renamed what thug means, which means truly humbled under God.
Okay, so he's a spin doctor.
Right?
Spin doctor.
And then a few months later, when nobody wanted to represent Diddy, he's the same lawyer who said, I'll do it. And look now, he's acquitted of racketeering.
So, this guy obviously has some serious skills in that department.
Yes.
I mean, he should be running one of those, what do they call it, reputation management agencies?
Yeah, definitely.
This doesn't, of course, make Diddy any better.
No, that's why
he's still a terrible person.
Yes.
And I think that this thing fell apart for Diddy in that the girlfriend... this Cassie girl, she stuck around for like a decade, which is what I was talking about when we first brought up this thing, right? If you're going to stick around and then you accuse someone of like sex trafficking you or abusing you or whatever, but you stay, you're kind of acquiescing to it. And I think that didn't help his case.
Yeah.
Or the case of the prosecution, let's say.
Yeah, it definitely helped his case.
It helped him, yeah.
Yeah. So according to messages. Candace Owens, who I love so much.
Yeah, what does she have to say?
Her whole take is that this was more of a humiliation ritual. Considering the fact that when the feds do charge you with this and they have like this really good record of like winning 95 to like 98% of their cases.
Yeah.
So they don't tend to just take on anybody unless they know they're going to win.
Yeah.
So the fact that they took on this case and it wasn't, you know, she watched the whole trial play out. She was like, they don't really have a good defense. Like, so why did he go through this? Like, why did they even try prosecute him if in the beginning they really weren't standing on a good leg? And so her whole take is it was maybe a humiliation ritual. And this is what they do in America. They do that. Because, you know,
But who gains from that?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Well, it's about keeping a certain order, right?
Yes.
He flew too close to the sun, so therefore he needs to be dragged into it. You know, the whole theory about making like black celebrities dress up in dresses.
Yes.
Those kind of theories.
And once you start picking up on that, you notice that, hey, before somebody gets really successful in Hollywood, they do that. Why is this man now wearing a dress all of a Sunday? Or they have to kiss, gender.
Oh, assuming like if men... black men have to wear dresses in Hollywood. Is that
thing.
A thing they make?
Yes.
A humiliation ritual.
Snoop Dogg talks about it. It's like
how bizarre.
It's a proper thing. But sorry, I was going to go back to, again, I should probably know more about this. But it looked like there was a case against P. Diddy because of all the shit that he got up to. Or was just...
The thing is, what they were accusing him of, like of sex trafficking, is and basically...
It's just how those people live.
No. And all these like sexual cases... A, he was doing it with adults, and most of it, from what was revealed, was kind of consensual. That's the issue: is that you can't arrest someone for being freaky.
Just being a freak.
That's not a crime.
So people sing about it.
Yeah. Being a creepy, weird freak.
It's not a crime.
Having your freak off with all that baby oil. That ain't a problem. Okay, here's what I think is at the heart of this too: is that we don't have any terminology for dealing with morally ambiguous people other than consent. All we have is consent.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So the only thing that adults can do is say, yes, I'm keen, or no, I'm not. Mm. Even if those things that occur after the yes, I'm keen are disgusting and unacceptable and
it's such a
revolting
point,
and
in a court
creepy
of law,
and weird. I don't care about that stuff.
None of it matters, actually, because if he goes to court, this is one of the things. You play the rules of where you are.
Okay, why is it wrong to, you know, scratch someone or to stab them while you're having sex or to, I don't know, hurt them, abuse them verbally or whatever? Why is it wrong? It's wrong because it's morally wrong. I mean, they may have consented to that. They may even enjoy it at some point, but it's still morally wrong. if you walked in on a couple by mistake, you're not some sort of voyeur. You walked in on a couple by mistake and she was like thrashing him with a whip, okay? And he was screaming in pain. It's none of your business, so you back the fuck out. But you know it's wrong, even though they're two consenting adults and they're doing this to each other. People do a lot of stupid, terrible, immoral stuff to each other.
Yips.
And they get away with it because it's consensual, because the only thing that the law applies is consent. This is as a result of us abandoning decency, manners, treating each other well, having a sense of right and wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, outside of the law. The law should not be the only thing that determines that. If there's a guy who invites a whole bunch of rich, powerful celebrities to his place and he has hookers there servicing them, you could argue morally ambiguous. Let's be charitable here.
Maybe not your kind of friend.
But if you are having those girls, I don't know, abused,
trafficked,
maybe they're underage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of that, then the law gets involved, right?
There are literal guns to heads.
Only from that point on.
Yeah.
Right? So only from the point of, are there laws broken?
Mm-hmm.
No. So like you two said just now, you could be P. Diddy. You could be some kind of freaky, baby oil everywhere. He liked to watch people, apparently, and all this kind of stuff. You could be all those things, but they can't find you guilty of anything because you haven't broken any laws. In our modern society and in the kinds of relationships people have, you don't have to be a good person. You just don't have to break any rules. Just try not to break the rules. You'd be a horrible person and treat people like he treated Cassie.
Yeah.
Just don't break the laws. Which to me it's too low a standard. I don't think consent is the only thing that's required, especially in relationships, situations of love and sex and whatever else. I think you've got to have a few more rules that we don't need lawyers to apply. Like, there's got to be a way for you, if you want someone to respect and admire and love you, and you want to respect and admire them, there've got to be certain things that you just don't do to each other.
Yes. But I think...
Right? Who argues that?
But also with that, I think it's easy for us to be like, okay, this should be what we deem right or wrong, right? So I'll use it from a Christian perspective. As a Christian, the Bible is very clear, no sex before marriage, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a very clear moral standard to live by, to say, if I partake in sex before marriage, you're doing something wrong.
Right.
But then you also have like the Western culture where they're like, do you? And if you are feeling somebody, just go, you know, have a one night stand. And it's like, you know, very liberal and stuff like that, right? And then you realize that these are two different worlds that really can't live with each other, because the one is very clear on this and the other one's like, do what you want to do. And I think that's where we find like the conflict in what Diddy did, is that, yes, he's a freak. He is very much a freak. But I think he's also engaging with people that come from a different perspective of like, I'm not sure if I want to engage with this or if this is correct. And now we're hearing...
They weren't quite sure what they're getting into.
Yes. And that's now the issue, where someone's like, actually, these freak-offs are problematic because I don't indulge in this. And he's like, but I like it. That's my cup of tea.
Yeah, but this is why so many men and women, but a lot of women, are feeling unfulfilled after sexual encounters, thanks to dating apps or whatever, with guys, is because the only rule that applies, the only communication of any import between that man and woman, is consent. It's like, can I come over? Yeah, sure, come over. All right, so we're going to do this? Yeah, we're going to do this. Then, boom. Next day, he doesn't call her?
Yeah.
Why is she upset? Like, he didn't rape her. She could lie and say that he did, but he didn't.
Yes.
Why is she upset? Because she didn't just want sex. She wanted something more.
Yes.
And she wanted to be treated like something more afterwards.
Yes. So one thing I've had to learn is that what's the rule? Women are the custodians of sex and men are the custodians of relationships. So when it comes to that, right, it's if you approach me, the power's the power's in my court, the ball's in my court, because I'm the one who's dictating whether or not we're going to get intimate, right? I'm the one who's like, you can come over, no.
Right.
But the moment I do have a sexual encounter with you, you have all the cards in
you
your
hand. Right.
And that's why women tend to feel like, oh, no, because you let go of your power.
Has making consent the only thing reduced the value of intimacy? If consent's the only thing, is that not a really crappy low standard to go by?
Gareth, you know what it always comes back to? It's like ultimately you do these things so it applies to everybody. And there'll never be a perfect solution.
Sure.
But as you just pointed out, that's the only thing that can be the one base standard for all of us to live by. Otherwise, it's too nuanced. It's too difficult to uphold. It's too difficult to make a standard measurement around. But I mean, the big question is that should we then feel sorry for Justin Bieber if he consented to all the stuff that happened to him?
Poor Justin Bieber. What do you think they did to that poor child? Have you seen how he looks at the moment? You think the Liver King looks bad? Poor fucking
horrible.
Justin Bieber. See if you can find a recent picture of him.
But you see, with that, he was a kid. So if you trace back when they had discovered Justin Bieber, he was a kid. And
good
so
point.
So you can say from that point of view, there is no consent. He's a child.
And we
can't normalize doing horrible things to children. That's one thing we can't. And so that's the sad part of it, is that he's an adult now and he's not trying to sue or whatever. So we can't necessarily take up that fight for him and be like, but they did you wrong when you were only 12. There's a level of like, he still needs to fight and
so,
you know,
I mean,
like,
that's,
take back the power.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what Suge Knight said. Obviously, he's a trusted authority in this realm, is that he was passed around by all kinds of men that P. Diddy arranged. So it would be like, this summer, should I go to Club Med?
Oh, no. So P. Diddy was the pimp?
Yes.
Yeah, so this is the whole thing about P. Diddy, right? It's an Epstein kind of thing altogether. It's like, oh, should I go to Club Med this summer? No, I'm going to call Diddy. He's going to put Bieber in my room in Cancun and then... it's going to take Viagra for 3 days. Because this is the realm that we're talking about.
Like, look at
Jesus.
Him.
Congo Chris says, I blame postmodernism and social Marxism. If you view everything as a power struggle, you will inevitably exercise dominance. And without objective morality, anything is permissible.
Smart people listen to this show, huh? Yeah.
Look at Justin Bieber. Well done, Congo Chris. That's a very fine distillation of what we're talking about, actually. Look at Justin Bieber. Good God. What a mess.
And he's a married man at this, hey? Oh, I feel sorry for Haley.
I do feel sorry. I never thought I'd feel sorry for that guy. Look at that. What a sad state of affairs. Zelna says the lawyer said he could have hit her harder, but he didn't.
Yeah, like, so.
Jesus, what a nice lawyer.
So apparently in his closing remarks, I think one of his opening statements was, Cassie is no victim.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
he was very like, she partook. And then he was like,
you know,
so
what?
Dramatic.
A lot of these lawyers, it's like when, like, who was the guy who was the guy who did the OJ trial?
Johnny
famously?
Cochran.
Johnny Cochran. If the glove does not fit, you must acquit. Remember?
It's so dramatic.
It's like they came up with this shit. But there was a good line that I'm going to try and paraphrase it without screwing it up. He said, Diddy is not on trial for being a good person. And he will defend to his death the things he did not do. Something like that. There are things he did, sure, he's embarrassed about those, but he will defend to his death the things he did not do. I'm like, well, we only know. who needs that much baby oil? Again, that's just fucked up. Okay, what is stopping Justin from telling what happened? I'm kind of tired of speculations. Well, it's up to him.
Yeah,
he's not
going to
tell him. Maybe he's so embarrassed and hurt and wounded by it.
But that's exactly the thing. And this is what makes being a victim so difficult about things, because you want to do something about it, but then it'll make it worse for you, perhaps. Maybe he's just found peace that he lives in this middle ground, which is that photo you saw. And then that's what is going to be his life for now. Because, guys, again, we are completely talking out of our arse here. We're speculating. Yeah. I know, guilty, cuff me here. But how do you have money, you're a good-looking, talented person, and you look like that, and you act as fucked up as that. Something happened to you. Something happened to you that shouldn't happen to you.
Yeah.
No one just suddenly becomes like that because, yes, I've met many people in my life. I joined the dots. Something's happened.
Yes.
But not like, oh, my dog died or, you know, my sports team lost. Something happened, as in get in that hotel room over there, Justin. There's a Ferrari in the car park, but there's also, I don't know, Barry Horowitz from
Paramount Pictures.
Yeah. It's like those actresses who get so into the drugs and then they, I don't know, they fucking become llamas in the later
life. Have you seen the clip of Charlize Theron that's going around?
Charlize Theron.
What does she have to
say? That's why I bought her mother's phone cover. What's the mother's name?
Brunhilde.
What's her name? Anyway, I can't remember. Have you got that Charlize clip? I'll send it to you, yeah. Don't worry. It's worth taking a look at.
Oh, James has got it.
Oh, you got it. Okay, yeah, here we go.
James on top of things.
James is on it this morning.
With women, it's always like, something must be wrong with her. She can't keep a man. She must be a real bitch. What a cunt. I love that I don't have to run every fucking thing by a guy. I'm having the kind of sex I never had in my 20s or in my 30s. We should be the ones that are like, fuck you. Like, I'm gonna have an orgasm. But I did just recently fuck a 26-year-old and it was really fucking amazing. There's a casting for this movie and you have to go on Saturday night and they gave me the address and it was this director's house. The little voice inside me definitely said, this isn't right. I remember like being furious with myself because I couldn't believe how I had let myself down. Like, I was like, what the fuck? Who the fuck are you? Where the fuck? Why the fuck would you allow that? Until you are in this fucking environment, don't tell me how you're going to behave.
What's up?
So as the only woman on the show, we'll go with you on that one.
Okay, so let me say, I'm so conflicted by this. I find Charlize Theron, I don't know how old she is right now, but she's very physically beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. But she still talks like she lives in fucking Springs. Yeah. What's going on there?
You can take Charlize out of Benoni.
But you can't
listen,
take Benoni out of
don't get me wrong. I'm certainly one of those prudish guys who like has a problem with women who swear or whatever. You know I don't. And we swear on this show, and I don't mind swearing. In fact, I think it's sometimes the most apposite way to exclaim a reaction to anything. However, there's just something kind of coarse and off-putting, and I can't help being, while I still have to admit she is absolutely naturally beautiful, like I'm very put off seeing that clip. I'm very put off. It's and it wasn't the language, and it wasn't, it's like her behavior is, she's just, I don't know, she's
she
not.
She gave bitch.
She's not nice. She's not a nice.
That's what she gave. She gave that. She gave from that club.
I fucked her 21st.
Yeah, okay. Also, just get your house in order, but that's me judging her. But she also, towards the end, when she was talking about the director, the clip is alluding that she might have slept with the guy and that's why she was.
Well,
disappointed in herself. It's alluding. We don't know. We must listen to
them. I have no doubt that, just like we were talking about Bieber, and that's what made me think about this, is that Charlize was, you know, plowed by a bunch of directors in her
prime. But that's Hollywood, though. And the thing is, and the bubble has burst on that mystery now a long time ago. Yeah. All of these trials, we know how these people
are. You won Best Actress. No, I blew Harvey Weinstein. Exactly. Yeah. You didn't win Best Actress, honey. You got into the Weinstein house before you got arrested. That's what happened.
Yeah, and this was her confessing and basically saying
that. Yeah, the only girls who are talking about it are the ones who didn't get their Oscar and said no to Harvey Weinstein. And they're the ones who are like, oh, I'm going to go and tell the Hollywood society about you, Mr. Weinstein. Meanwhile, all the other actresses who did are like, shut the fuck up.
Yes, because they know what they're signing up for. Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, even in that clip where she's like, oh, it's somebody's house, it's a director. It's like, you think about it and you're like, I know what this means. If I go to that house, it means one thing and one thing only.
Plowed.
Like, what? So already you just know that me going there is already me saying yes to this thing, whatever is going to take place. But if I do not go, that means that, oh, I'm going to have to work 10 times harder. He's not going to like me and all that. And once you go, just know that there's no returning. Like, you do that once, you're going to do it again. And she's like, I'm happy. As long as I have a career, I'm happy.
Yeah, guys, again, it goes back to the thing about the OnlyFans girls nowadays, too. It's like they know they can flash their gash for like $100, or they can have a horrible job where they make $100 in a week.
I think that's different, though.
But it's like, you know what they're getting into, to your point. It's like,
yes.
You know what you're signing up for.
But I think with this one, the trade-off is you have a career. Millions of people respect her until, like, watching this podcast.
I'm just saying, they
look up to her. They're like, if she can do it, and I'm from Benoni, then I too can do it. You know what I mean? That, like, yes, girl, let's go. Whereas with OnlyFans, it's just like a very, like, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't. You're gonna have kids just economies. One day. It's just economies of scale to me.
It's
like there's no difference between
how we make our money.
Yeah, being a Hollywood actress or being an OnlyFans girl. To me, and remember, I mean, actresses have only been a thing, and we don't have to go down this road in any detail. But you know, actresses and prostitutes were like on the same level for most of human history. If a girl was an actress, she's probably like prostituting on the side. And if she was a prostitute, you better believe she could have acted.
Okay, but what's the difference? Why do prostitutes, why do actors then become more famous and become more money?
Because in the last 100 years.
Because you can build audience around what
they do. No, because in the last 100 years, it's become possible for those people to be known by so many people. You know, an audience you could fit into a theater once. So if you were a great Shakespearean actor, you would have had like 50 to maybe 100 to maybe 200 people in the Globe Theatre on the south bank of the Thames. And then they'd all go home, yo, that Will Shakespeare's good, eh? I like his plays. They'd go to sleep the next day, they'd wake up and they'd go and see a Marlowe play or something else. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they wouldn't probably be able to see a play every night. They'd probably see one every 2 or 3 months because that's all they could afford. And the actors, as great as they may have been, you know, Kenneth Branagh might have been up on the fucking stage in the Royal Shakespeare doing King Lear, and maybe 200 people would have seen his greatest performance on that night. And that's it. It's not broadcast to millions. So when Hollywood comes along and people start making movies, you could even argue before that in radio, the voices become famous, the faces become famous. You have the golden era of kind of Clark Gable and, you know, those sorts of people. Then movies become these amazing things, can reach millions of people all over the world. And they watched over the course of hundreds of years now, because we've had movies for since the 1930s, not quite 100, but we're getting up to 100 years of color cinema. So it's become available to everybody. And those people are, by virtue of the fact they can reach these audiences, much more famous than anyone's ever been before. So actors and actresses are getting the kind of attention they'd only have got from 200 people a night.
Yeah, exactly. I totally
and
agree.
And three
with
or
you.
Four around the corner,
like,
after
a,
the show.
A prostitute has an audience of one and maybe some word of mouth. An actor then has an audience of millions. Sims, I want to get back to a point that you made, though, is that if women are the custodians of sex,
yes,
it's something they have access to, something they can control.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that isn't particularly hard for them.
Mm.
Do you not then think it's really crass and cringe when women boast about that? It's like guys go through so many hoops. Picture a border collie at a fucking dog show and they're being strung along by some woman. That's what a guy does to try to get sex.
Yeah.
So as much as I don't ever go, I don't like endorse guys bragging about it. It's actually something to brag about, because guys have to do a fucking lot to get sex. Women, nothing. Charlie's Thron basically opened the door for a pizza delivery without pants on, and she had sex. So it's not something, exactly something to brag about. How do you feel about that?
As I get older, I think I understand why I would say my gran and my aunts were very strict on, like, the fact that you don't just have sex with anybody. Like, it was a thing of, like, you know, istimasako, which is basically I don't know what that is in English.
Self-esteem.
But yes, is very important, right? And the only way you can kind of keep that and guard that is to not sleep around with everybody. Because once you open that, gate, you can't close it. And the reality is that men will be proud of the fact that, hey, I slept with Sims and I did that. And in the moment when you're in your 20s, it's like, yeah, no, I'm the one who said yes. And, you know, I have all the power. But as you get older, you realize that actually you just let yourself go to anybody and you didn't vet anyone, which is more telling of you as a person, right?
But like that Bonnie Blue chick.
She annoys me. Yes. That one, keep the kids away from
it. It's gross.
But it's disgusting. But it also tells us on how you think about things, right? So in the long term, yes, it might have just been sex, but that means when it comes to long-term decisions, you're not really thinking about it. You're not really vetting things out. So it means there's a major character flaw in who you are, right? And sometimes you can do better and learn and grow as a person.
I think that's a good point. That thing about the character flaw
in
who you are.
Yes, it's a character flaw because you can't just let everybody into your life. It doesn't make sense. Now so, you're telling me about something that's very sacred and everybody who just greets you gets in.
Congo Chris says, did Ben just say prostitutes have word of mouth or work of mouth?
Yeah, but both, huh?
And he says that prostituting is a respectable trade, but OnlyFans is not. What about the Venetian courtesans, asks Roxanne. Nothing's changed since the 14th century. No, it hasn't. And then Danny says, I'm seeing F1 this weekend. Don't tell me how bad it is.
No, it's
apparently
not bad.
So James went to see it. You've seen it?
No, I've seen the trailer and I'm psyched
Okay, as a non-Formula One fan, I want to see it. Looks damn good.
Can I tell you why people might think it's bad? Is that in every big story, you want to see rags to riches, sort of like...
Transformation
kind of thing.
From A to B.
Yeah, so I haven't seen it yet. I want to see it. But the whole thing is that Brad Pitt's meant to be from bad to good, but you don't see the bad. He's just good straight away.
Oh, really?
Okay.
So there's no real resolve of a tension or a conflict.
Could be people like that. I mean, I don't think everybody has to go through the bad, good transformation.
No, but you do in stories like that because why is he then the old guy with the young guy? Not just because he's been like Bernard Langer and like diligence and stuff and boring. You've got to have the rock and roll side. It's like, wow, it's very unlikely that he can go from there to here, but here he is.
Okay, but you say the rock and roll side. I have been reading about the Rolling Stones lately. For some reason, I've gone down that rabbit hole. Since about the early 70s, maybe the late 70s, but certainly in that decade, okay, which is almost 50 years ago, that was the last time that the Stones were really bad. After that, they've just been working, just grinding. They're just on stage, concerting, fucking singing, playing drums, guitars, going on tour. Mick Jagger doing interviews, that kind of shit. They're not exciting. Their lives are not that interesting.
That's why they had longevity.
Sure, but that is the reality for most people. This goes to what we started the show with this morning: consistency, discipline, the boring shit.
Yeah.
And the boring shit, once you've learnt it, you just keep rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, and that is success. That's how you build success. It's not audacious feats. I mean, I overheard this conversation the other day between two people. This guy is doing some long-distance swim, God bless him, for charity, okay? He's raising money for probably a very good cause, but he's talking about how he has to, every 30 minutes, he has to eat 90 grams of protein, this, that. Now, while he's swimming, which means a boat has to go alongside him. And this is an ordeal for all involved. And it's an ocean swim. It's not in a swimming pool. So, and now he's talking about doing a night swim and everything else. The other guy's really interested in this, is asking him questions. And I just thought, this is very stupid. I mean, you could have all the mums at a school bake cakes and you'd probably make more money than he's going to raise doing his swim.
Spread more joy as well.
And it'll spread more joy. I mean, who doesn't love a cake from the mums at a school? You know,
I'm going to go buy a cake today.
Right, actually, absolutely. And you know you should, Ben. Like that braai that I had on Monday.
I'm going to have a cake.
You know, spoil yourself.
And I'll send you pictures.
Do whatever you want.
cake.
Yeah. Send us pictures of your cake.
Gareth,
so I looked at this guy and I just thought, he's doing it, I believe. At some level, he's a good guy who wants to raise money for a good cause. But at some other level, it's like, now we all have to be part of him testing himself.
But we spoke about this years ago, I think with Rich Mulholland even.
Foisting.
Like, I'm going to go climb Kilimanjaro. No, because you want to go climb, get attention. Try and make out. Yeah. You're foisting your goodwill upon me and I must be a part of it.
Foisting.
So the thing, I interviewed a woman who did one of these kind of swims and she gave me the whole nitty gritty. I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah.
You tell me anyone who wants to do that again, I'm already bored because I've already heard her story. Yes. And her story was fucking great and she did it.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry.
She's already taken that space in your head that might have been interested in those swims.
I don't want to hear it again.
And I know that sounds selfish to me because I will never go swim in the ocean to go raise money for leukemia children or something. But it's also like,
we live in a country. You know, can I tell you, we have more NGOs in South Africa than any other country, I think, with the exception of America, okay, in the world. We have so many NGOs. Some of these people are raising money for this. I'm not adding the Lotto, which is now run by the Mashatiles, but there are lots of charities and NGOs in South Africa. A lot of them, and I'm not trying to in any way disparage the good ones, because I'm sure that they are doing tremendous good work. Sure. And there are many millions of people who rely on that good work.
Societies, yeah, sure.
But if you made a law tomorrow that NGOs and charities, if they were paying more than 50% of their total revenues to staff costs, would go out of business. If you said you're not allowed to run a charity or an NGO if you are going to spend more than 50% of your revenues on staff, on salaries, 90% of them would disappear overnight because they're actually just fronts for a lot of lazy, useless people.
But this was the whole thing about the USAID thing, right?
Exactly, who are doing nothing. Correct, and who are probably doing not good things if they're doing more than nothing. And then there are a few who are doing good things.
Yeah,
profile building, political stuff, getting involved in propaganda and foisting.
I remember a mate of mine is a filmmaker. He told me the story of how he got involved in this charity he thought was incredible, right?
Okay.
And they had this fucking gala event in south of France or some shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he went through this whole process with these people. This and that. And then eventually, at the end of the event, he was having drinks with them. And one of them was like jokingly, you know, we might even cover our costs for this one this year. As in, it was never about raising the money. It was all about getting people together for one big fucking circle joke of how nice, but true.
Oh.
And he said, I'll never do one of those things ever again.
Yeah.
Those people are not who they say they are. It's such a front.
No. A lot of the people who are raising money for a good cause are not,
their own cause.
The donors, sure.
It detracts from the ones who are doing the good work, unfortunately.
It does, but there are bad people out there, and we've got to call this to an end because I'm getting shouted at by the producers. James says, press the tit, which means we've got to get to 7 o'clock break. And in a short while, I'm going to talk to Richard Wilkinson. Now, he's been like a soldier on the front lines of South African education. And if you have children, you're worried about their education, you're worried about all the political shit that's going on at schools, which should not affect your children. They're there to learn.
Mm.
And we have such a problem in South Africa. I don't want to preview this too much, but you'll hear from Richard. He's been looking into this, by the way, in his spare time, which we'll talk about too. And I think you'll find his whole take on it fascinating. That's coming up in the next bit. Ben and Sims will be back with us next Friday. Thank you, guys.
Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay.
I'm going to speak to Richard.
Okay.
Unless you're welcome to join in.
Oh, fuck, cool. I want to talk about how excited I'm going to Loftus tomorrow.
We haven't even talked about sport. All right, let's do sport when we come back, and then we'll start with Richard afterwards. You're going to Loftus tomorrow.
I don't want to foist myself on you
guys.
Don't
foist.
But fuck, it's the weekend, you know, Ben, the boxer in Pretoria.
You're not foisting, people want to know. So that's coming up next. Don't go anywhere.